This is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Oliver. It's Thursday and the fine weather we've been having has disappeared. It's back to normal. It's grey, it's drizzly, it's light drizzle. It's miserable, it's Manchester. How you doing? Hope you're well. Thanks for joining me.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
I met my love.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I got a brilliant show for you today. Dr. Stuart Waiton, PhD, author, academic. A man who's talked a lot about free speech, about the named person issue in Scotland, about abolishing hate crimes. Really interesting man. Stuart Waiton in the second hour to talk about the banning of Tommy Robinson by Facebook and more besides. But before that, delighted to welcome back to the programme a terrific reporter and journalist, Gemma O'Doherty. Amazing woman. She's going to be talking about a brand new initiative that she's just launched. I'm not going to tell you anything about it right now. We'll wait till she comes on the programme in about 20 minutes' time. She's put together this initiative, and people are signing up to it all across Ireland overnight. It's a people-led initiative to tackle corruption in Ireland, and it's really interesting. We'll get into that with Gemma this hour. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv. Tune in radio, my website, and all the other places as well. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the old weather has gone back to normal. We won't be having any more moorland fires then, I suppose. Yeah. Right, and I think I got the gremlins that were in the system yesterday out of the system, even though you didn't notice, because there were no hitches. I managed to do something else, but we're all good, we're all good. Serious story to start off with. Relatives of those killed in the Manchester Arena attack are annoyed today, and they've been calling for greater openness and transparency from UK authorities about the extradition of the bomber's brother from Libya. This is Hashim Abedi. Salman Abedi is the man we are told blew himself up and killed 22 and injured dozens of others on May 22nd, 2017. His brother is in Libya, and the bereaved have been speaking today. They're upset that they're being kept in the dark. They're also annoyed about the fact that the inquest into what happened won't really begin in earnest until next year. I've got some audio for you. You'll hear a father who lost a child in the bombing, and you'll also then hear Sky News' Tom Parmenter. So you'd hear one of the dads, and then you'd hear a Sky News reporter summing it up.
I don't think they actually know where he is. We've asked, where is he? So they keep saying he's being held by some militia group. Well, they don't actually know. I don't think they've sent anybody. And I don't think they actually know. But I feel as upset today as I did the day it happened. So if once they realise how hurt we really are, they might do something about it.
Yeah, 13 months from now is the earliest date they were told the inquest will start. That is the timetable the coroner wants to work to, but a lot of this is out of his hands. The root cause of the delays to this process is that extradition process between the UK and Libya, trying to get the brother of Salman Abedi back to the UK from Libya, a difficult task, as was acknowledged in the hearing today. And Greater Manchester Police say they are working very hard to try and make that happen as soon as possible, but it has not been possible at this stage to share all the details of how that is happening. They're going to try to do that a bit better in the future, they said today, via their counsel at the pre-inquest hearing that took place in the city earlier. April the 6th, 2020 is the date that they are working to, but of course that is almost 3 years on from the attack at the Manchester Arena that killed 22 people back in May 2017.
Yeah, and I won't labour the point because I did speak about this last night and it comes up a lot. The reason why they are dragging their heels with respect to getting Salman Abedi's brother back into the country is because MI6 are terrified because they have a lot of exposure here. MI6, of course, worked with the father of the Manchester Arena bomber, bombing, a man called Ramadan Abedi. He worked for MI6 in the attempts to assassinate Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, of course, back in the 1990s. This is filthy. And while people died in that arena, and to see the parents and the older brothers and sisters today devastated that this inquiry, this inquest, won't begin till next year, people died, people were injured, but I'm not convinced that Salman Abedi was the guy who did it. And I've got very good reasons not to believe that. Right. Now, you'll know that 9 Labour MPs have left the Labour Party recently. Some of them have said that it's because of anti-Semitism. They're lying. It's all to do with destroying the UK's departure from the European Union. In my opinion, that is. Now, the deputy leader of the Labour Party is a man called Tom Watson. He has said today that he's concerned that others will leave too, and he thinks it's all about anti-Semitism. He said, "I think there are still a number of my colleagues perilously close to leaving." Yeah, Watson said there was a battle for the soul of the Labour Party, and he claimed the decision by Jewish MP Luciana Berger to resign was the most shameful day in the history of my party. Tom Watson, you fucking cretin! The most shameful day in the history of your party was when your bum chum, Tony Blair, stood in Parliament and said that Iraq had the capability to attack the UK in 45 minutes. The most shameful day in the history of the Labour Party was when Blair wrote to George Bush and said, "We're with you no matter what," which has resulted in the deaths of millions of Iraqis. Shameful day. Sorry for the rant. That's been building up all day, that, because Sky News has been running this clip all day long. Listen to this rotund, ridiculous wanker, Tom Watson.
I felt personal shame, and I thought it was the most shameful day in the history of my party when Luciana Berger left us. She is a young, pregnant woman bullied out by racist thugs, and that is completely unacceptable. And, you know, when she did that, at that point, I realised that I had to step up, and I'm going to be calling this out day in, day out, as long as it continues.
Yeah, they should get him a cape and a blue T-shirt and put SZ on it. Super Zionist Tom Watson there. There is no such thing as anti-Semitism. There is no evidence that hatred of Jewish folks in this country is on the rise. It's certainly not going on in the Labour Party. There are a lot of people pissed off with the influence of Zionism in British public life, and in the reluctance of the Labour Party to call out the Israeli Nazi regime for what it is. That's what's going on. But hatred of Jewish folks, it ain't happening. I'm leaving that there. Too much on that this week. You know that there's an inquiry into child abuse, the IICSA, the Independent Inquiry into Child Abuse, child sexual abuse. It rumbles on this. It's being headed up by the by Professor Alexis Jay. Alexis Jay has broken cover today to say that she's deeply disturbed by news that children in custody in England and Wales are being exposed to harrowing incidents, that's a quote by the way, of physical and sexual abuse. There were nearly 1,100 reported incidents of abuse between 2009 and 2017. These are children, young offenders basically, and they're being raped or they're being beaten, sexually molested in UK institutions. She's broken cover to say this, and she's actually gone on the record, Alexis Jay, as saying that children in custody are at great risk today in the United Kingdom. It's only the tip of the iceberg. There's so much to talk about, I can't even get into that. We'll get into it another day. Here's an extraordinary story by Nick Timothy in the Telegraph newspaper today. Nick Timothy, I'm going to read you some of this. He writes, Nick Timothy, he writes, "Today, Labour councils threaten the rule of law by blocking the removal of illegal immigrants from Britain. Last week, Lewisham's mayor, who's a Labour, kicked out a Home Office official embedded with the council. The Home Office official's job was to identify illegal immigrants there. Southwark expelled their embedded official last year. That's also a Labour council. And Haringey kicked out theirs the year before. And a Labour source has said that the Home Office officials are there to enforce government laws and they're not helping people. So we've booted out these guys because it's not our responsibility as Labour councils to inform on vulnerable migrants when they come to us seeking shelter and support. And Nick Timothy writes in the Telegraph today, he says, yes, you heard that right. It's not the job of Labour councils to uphold the law. Instead, the Labour source said, councils should grant emergency funds to illegal immigrants without notifying the Home Office. The fact that this keeps illegal immigrants and their children in legal limbo, often at the mercy of organised criminals, doesn't matter. For the hard left, the credo is clear. Illegal immigration good, law enforcement bad. And this is an excellently researched and sourced article here. Labour councils are kicking out immigration officials from the Home Office. They're not telling the Home Office about illegal immigrants. And they're diverting funding that's meant for the area, whether it's Haringey, whether it's Lewisham, for the upkeep and for the safekeeping of illegal immigrants. Now, I'm a real socialist, a real one. Read my website, listen to the some of the radio shows recently, Jeremy Corbyn and Manifesto and Labour and Owen Jones. These are social democrats. They're not socialists. They've never been socialists. When people come to this country because they're fleeing persecution, and we know this to be true, they must be looked after. They must be taken care of. They must be looked after, whatever the cost. That's a fact. When the country has a skills gap, when it has a shortage of labour in whatever industry or in whatever sector, we should, of course, offer, open the doors to people to fill those gaps when they cannot be filled by UK citizens. But what's going on with these Labour councils? This party that's supposed to represent the working class of the UK. It's the working class and it's the lowest income families in the country that suffer the most when the floodgates are opened and Eastern European migrants and other migrants from the EU8 countries, whatever you want to call them, semi-skilled or no skilled at all, come here and take low-skilled or semi-skilled jobs or low-income jobs. It is the working class, and I'm a working class lad myself and proud of it. It is they who suffer. And traditionally, trade unionists, going back to the 70s and 80s, and real socialists were very much anti this type of immigration. And what's Labour councils doing? Well, they're basically saying, we're just going to break the law. We'll do whatever the hell we want. We'll kick out Home Office officials and we'll divert Labour we will divert council funding to enable us to break the law and to do what I've just described. Staggering stuff. It's in the Telegraph today. It's amazing. It's all there. A lot of tweets have come in the last couple of minutes. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Going to be speaking with Gemma O'Doherty. I might bring that up, actually, because that's something that Gemma O'Doherty's been talking about with respect to Ireland. So we'll get into that with her in a couple of minutes' time. 16 minutes past the hour. Hi to Patrick. Hi to Mwinga. Hi to everybody who's tweeting. A lot of people tweeting. Hi to Bob the Man. How you doing, Bob? Hi to Ricky Emmett as well. Hi to Martin, who's listening to the programme in Spain. Hi to Cartoon Drunk. Lots of people tweeting this afternoon. That's good. Don't forget Dr. Stuart Waiton, PhD, will join the programme in the second hour. But in a few minutes' time, we'll be joined by the always interesting, terrific journalist Gemma O'Doherty. Before we hear her, we've got some Jamiroquai. Bit of Jamiroquai. Imagine Tom Watson saying the most shameful day in the history of the party was when Luciana Berger left. The 3.5 million dead Iraqis don't mean anything to Tom, eh? Back in two. 20 minutes past the hour, Jamiroquai, Cosmic Girl on the Richie Allen Show. Lots of tweets on Tom Watson and anti-Semitism. Might get into some of that with Stuart Waiton, PhD, in the second hour of the programme. Very important stuff, though. Right now, some very important stuff to be talking about. And you're very familiar with my first guest today. You know all about her. particularly if you're Irish, but increasingly because of our excellent YouTube live streams with fascinating interviewees, men and women. She's grown outside of Ireland. There's no doubt about that. Her profile has grown and grown and grown. She is a multi-award-winning reporter. She's written for all the big newspapers in the Republic of Ireland. She has exposed misdeeds, but she's exposed inaccuracies and inconsistencies around the murders of people like Father Niall Molloy and Mary Boyle. And as she says herself, and she's right, she devotes her life and her career to defending citizens' rights and to raise awareness of collusion between the state and media in Ireland. Now, before we say hello to her, I want to read you a little bit from the homepage of a brand new website, which is www.anti, that's A-N-T-I, -corruptionireland.com. That's anti-corruptionireland.com. Let me read you this. Ireland is drowning in a sea of corruption. Once the land of saints and scholars, it's now a den of iniquity, synonymous with cover-ups, white-collar criminality and cronyism. Every day in every corner of the country, citizens' rights are being abused and their taxes squandered by the corrupt ruling elite. From justice to health, agriculture to environment, migration to media, every sphere of Irish public life has been infested with a culture of dishonesty and sleaze. As a people, we cannot continue to stand by any longer and allow this to happen. We deserve better. Your children and grandchildren deserve better. Those who fought and died for our freedom deserve better. And finally, a new citizens' movement is in formation, devoted to ending this toxic culture of corruption that is ripping our republic to shreds. It will also fight against the threat of globalism and Agenda 21, which is dismantling our national sovereignty, cultural and natural heritage, and endangering our independence. Gemma O'Doherty, Bord Fáilte will never give you a job. Welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Oh, hi, Richie. It's great to be back, and I am so delighted to hear you back on the airwaves, because you were so sorely missed, and it's great to hear that you've made a full recovery and that you're in fighting spirit again, because I don't think you fully appreciate the work that you're doing in informing so many people about what is going on all around Europe, all around the world.
You're way too kind.
It's great.
You're way too kind, and thanks for the texts and the messages, and you were keeping an eye on me when I was sick. I really appreciate that. I didn't mean to be flippant with the Bord Fáilte crack, because I sadly have to endorse that. It's only half the opening statement on the website. I can't argue with any of it. I'd love to be the devil's advocate and go to bat for Ireland, but I can't do it. It's dreadful. Why now? Why this new initiative? Congratulations, by the way. Hundreds of people are signing up to this anti-corruptionireland.com. What do you hope to achieve with this?
Well, I suppose, you know, like so many citizens, I am just profoundly frustrated at the state of Ireland, the state of Europe. Everything that is happening in the UK, in France, Italy, Spain is happening in Ireland. The narrative is the same in every store, in every country. And apart from there being appalling poverty, unnecessary poverty, austerity, you know, a massive decline in education standards, a significant loss in our cultural heritage. I mean, it's just across the board, a health service that is in absolute ruins, and a political elite that constantly gaslight the public. I'm sure most of your listeners understand what that means, but, you know, they're telling us constantly that it's okay and this is the way it's supposed to be. And I just reached a point where I said, well, there's no point in continuously talking about it, Gemma. You have to do something. And I believe by setting up this, what I want, it's a citizens' movement. I don't want to call it a political party, but I want people to realise that they do have rights, that their rights are being exploited and abused. And I want them to feel that they can take power back. It's possible, I think, Richie, in a small country like ours, which has around 5 million people, and everyone, as you know, with Ireland, you know, even though we've got the highest immigration in Europe, we have nearly 20% of our population now is migrant, but we still Have a fairly close connection in terms of we tend to know each other, and there's always only one or two degrees of separation from people. And I know that the Irish people are utterly disillusioned and distraught at what is happening to their country.
We've spoken many times, you and I. I want you to address your critics, because you have a lot of critics. There's no doubt about that. When you put your head above the parapet and you talk about the things that you've been talking about through your career, to be fair to you, to your absolute credit, and of course, you know, the sorts of things that the media nowadays ignores, the vaccine crisis with the Gardasil vaccine, the HPV in Ireland, all these things that you shine some light on. And you talk about migration, and I'm happy to talk about migration. And when you do, you inevitably draw criticism from those who say that you're racist. Now, I don't believe you are for a minute. It's not my job to defend you, but I know you're not. It's not a case of I don't believe you're not. But you're getting a lot of that lately. People saying, xenophobia again, blame Johnny Foreigner. But that's not the truth. I want you to just address that. Address those people listening here tonight who want to say to you, you just want to blame the migrants.
Well, first of all, the people who call people like me racist, I actually think a lot of them are fake accounts. We've been doing a lot of research into this recently, and there are trolling factories in existence. A lot of this is coming out of Silicon Valley. It's Twitter, Facebook, but a lot of the time I don't even know who these people are. It's real people who are saying to me, "You're expressing exactly what we are feeling." So I utterly reject any suggestion at all of any racist tendency. I mean, I actually laugh. And all I know is that I know myself that I don't have a racist bone in my body. However, we have a scenario in our country at the moment where we have people sleeping on the streets in growing numbers. We have at least 10,000 homeless. We probably have 30,000, 40,000 homeless. We have the spectre of evictions and a tsunami of repossessions. And yet we have open borders. Now, we're not going to pretend that we have anything less, because we now, for some unknown reason, have nearly, as I've said, 20% of the population migrants. Now, the reality, Richie, is that many of these poor people coming to Ireland are from the third world, and they are very reliant on the welfare state, which is on its knees. So to me, I feel in the same way I wouldn't invite people into my home to say, come in, I can look after you. I don't believe that we should be saying that. I don't believe that there's, while we cannot look after our own house, we cannot be saying to poor migrants from the third world who think they're coming to the land of milk and honey and realise that when they get here, actually, it's quite a different story. I just think that that is immoral, unethical. I think it is also wrong that we are allowing our own ethnicity to be watered down. And that is what is happening. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about our cultural heritage. I was reading today how the name Muhammad is soaring up the ranks in the name. I know it's the most popular name in London now, a boy's name. But Irish people, I think, you know, would find that a little bit strange that a name like Muhammad would be. I think it's 63rd now in Ireland. Last year, it was 87th.
Wow.
Next year, it'll be 30. It'll be up there. And it's not that I have anything against people who are called Muhammad, but the reality is that the religion, the political ideology of Islam is not necessarily compatible with Irish culture. We have a scenario where we have ISIS training in our beautiful mountains in Wicklow. We have ISIS training camps in Wicklow. Now, I think
I didn't believe that, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. It's not that I heard you say it. It wasn't. I know that you've you're largely responsible for making people aware of that. You are. But I got it from another source, and I initially didn't believe it. And this is just as I was getting sick, to be honest. It was only a few weeks ago. And I thought to myself, no, this is just mischief making now. And then when I found out that it's true, I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. But it is true, because again, some of our listeners will be expecting me to jump right down your throat now and say, that's bollocks, Gemma. There's no evidence of that, but there is.
Look, Ireland is the softest touch in Europe because we don't have a police force, a police force that protects the public. They protect the political elite. They are the servants of the political elite. I mean, we know that. We've seen it, there's countless murders that have been covered up where there have been political connections and the Gardaí refused to investigate them. And I've worked on a number of them myself. Yeah. So I have, as a journalist with the Irish Independent, I covered issues in relation to Islam for many, many years. I was just around the time that the Muslim community was growing in Ireland. I was, working in the Independent, and I used to cover a lot of religious affairs and social affairs and education and health. And I got to know the situation out there. And I used to deal with a lot of moderate Muslims who were saying Al-Qaeda, ISIS are coming into Ireland because they're starting to clamp down on them in the UK. That was before they were inviting them back as, brides, etc. Before the situation had changed in the UK, when the clampdown was happening in the UK, they were coming here and they saw that it was completely soft touch. And these moderate Muslims were saying to me, you've got to start looking at these extremist mosques. And I covered a few stories in that regard. And then I didn't look at it for a number of years. But it was only recently, actually, that people started to show me the figures in relation to, mosques that are being built. We're getting these super mosques, 4 or 5 story mosques going up. And how quickly it happens. I mean, I was in Birmingham there a couple of years ago, and I may have told this story before, Richie, so I don't want to repeat myself on your show.
No, but it's relevant. It's relevant to what you're talking about. Yeah,
because I was in Birmingham on a story, and I was looking for the old Irish quarter, the old Irish suburbs, which I thought were still in existence. And somebody said to me, no, that's Muslim now. And I thought, it can't be, And I literally, when I went there, I could not see another woman who was not dressed in a burqa. I was literally the only person walking up and down these streets, and I could not believe I was in Birmingham. Now, I'm very naive, but Ireland is heading in this direction, and we have a right as a people to say, hold on a minute, is this what our ancestors fought for? Are we going to allow Ireland to become a state where Sharia law may be implemented? It's already possibly being used. And it's not only, I've been fortunate enough, Richie, to travel the world. I've spent time in the Middle East. I lived in Israel for a little while. Don't have a heart attack now when I tell you that.
That's all right. You're at a kibbutz. Presumably you were living in a kibbutz. I'm only joking. You weren't in a kibbutz.
Well, I won't go into it, but I was working on the Gaza border, and I saw that I have my own opinions about that, but I would be very supportive of the Palestinian plight. But I'm not an anti-Jew either, because
I'm
fed up with it all.
I'm fed up with it all as well, apologising for stuff. Exactly. Yeah. Why should we? Can I just jump in just for a second before you carry on with that? Where I've always been with this is, as a genuine socialist, as a real socialist, when countries are presented with people fleeing persecution and torture, genuinely, you have an obligation to look after people, proportionate to what you can actually do in terms of your economy, number one. Number two, I believe that when you've got I've said this in the monologue earlier, when you've got a skills gap and you've got a shortage of labour, genuinely, and you can't do anything about it in terms of with the indigenous population, you should be able to open the doors up and let people in. I have no problems with that either. But I said this earlier on, it's funny that you've got social democrats and progressives who are not socialists, who've hijacked the old left, because the old left was very concerned about immigration and what it does to the poorest people in countries, because you have either no skilled or semi-skilled people taking jobs that would have been taken by indigenous low-skilled or semi-skilled people. That's number one. Number two, with regards, I'm not a virtue signaler here, with regards to Islam, I have never believed, and I never will believe, that there is an Islamic agenda to take over the world. That's for Tommy Robinson and Ann Coulter and some of these morons. I don't believe that at all. Muslims in the main are as bewildered by what's been going on as you and I are. But where I totally agree with you is that migration has been weaponized. And it's been weaponized to destroy national sovereignty and ultimately to divide and conquer people inside those previously sovereign countries. I have no doubt that that's going on. People call it the Kalergi Plan, is a name for it. Others talk about it in other terms. It's not prejudicial, it's not racist, it's not hateful to talk about it because it's bloody well happening. But I have a bit of sympathy for, and I'm not trying to be all things to all people. I am a bastard. Number one, I really am. I'm hard. But I have sympathy for British Muslims and Irish Muslims who, you know, they like the rest of us, they work, they send their kids to school, they do their best, and they're bewildered by what's happening. I don't have sympathy for them listening to you, because I agree with what you're saying, but I have sympathy for them when they're listening to Rebel Media and Tommy DeGoon, Morrison, what am I talking about? Robinson and some of these people. That's all I want to say. Back to you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not per se an anti-Islam thing, because I'm not anti-Islam.
I know, you're not. Not in a million years.
I do feel that our culture, you know, which is soaked in alcohol, and that's a massive problem, is not particularly compatible with Islam. And we do have a Judeo-Christian heritage, which is still important to a lot of people. I think 98% of the population still consider themselves Roman Catholics, whether they're practicing or not, and a lot of them aren't.
Yeah.
I think personally, Richie, that a lot of them would have an issue with Ireland becoming Islamicized. I do feel that, and that's in my heart. I say that. Secondly, to those that you know, say that our borders should not, there's no such thing as an illegal person, that we should have open borders, to my mind these are the real racists, because what they're saying to these people is come in. They're duping these people for their own political reasons, of course, into thinking that they will have a life here, when we know the history of Ireland has been that the brightest and the best, including yourself, have had to leave. We have always had emigration throughout our entire history. We have not been able to look after our own people. So why these lunatics, and they're largely on the left, we don't have any, I hate these terms as well, left and right, but they're, you know, they're all of the parties in Ireland now are cultural Marxists, without an exception. And they're inviting mass migration into a country that is on its knees. Our schools are crumbling. Our hospitals are crumbling. We have nearly 1 million people on hospital waiting lists. We have 1 million people.
Is it a million, Gemma? Is it a million on hospital waiting lists? Can I challenge you on that?
It varies. You see, the figures don't. We can't trust any
sounds
of the
a
figures
lot, that,
coming
it,
yeah. out of government. But it's definitely over the 500,000. But it's, you know, I believe the figures are just not reliable. And then we have, you know, at least 1 million below the poverty line. We have so much poverty in this country. We have a tsunami of repossessions, as I've said. And it's all artificial, of course. It's all being done, you know, for the reasons you outline in your program every day. It's to do with, I do feel that they want to bring civil war to Europe. They want, you know, they're fully, you know, this Agenda 21, the plan to cause total chaos in people's lives and in countries is in full swing. And the only reason they are doing this, they are bringing in a lot of cultures into our country that are completely incompatible with our own traditional culture. They're doing this to create conflict between people.
Between
and
people.
Happening.
Do you
that's
know,
happening.
Gemma O'Doherty is our guest, folks. I have enormous respect for Gemma. I knew Gemma long before I met Gemma. I knew about her. I'd read her. And I want you to go to anti-corruptionireland.com. It's the brand new initiative that Gemma has launched overnight. And hundreds of people are signing up to this already. We will talk about the pillars, or as many of them as we can talk about, in a minute. But I'm urging you to go and have a look at it. You said something to me there, and it kind of, it moved me a bit there. You said something a couple of minutes ago. And, you know, if 20% of the population back home now is a migrant population, and if that's growing, for me, it will be a terrible shame in years to come, you know, that people who would have visited Ireland from around the world, because of Ireland's heritage, because of Ireland's story, which is an amazing story, of course, the history of our country. And then to get there and to see that the country is not really Ireland, or at least the Ireland that they'd read about when they booked their holiday. on, you know, in their holiday brochure. I'm making a mess of saying this, but I think you understand what I'm trying to say. It will be terrible. There are some really fantastic reasons for a country staying sovereign and for protecting, I suppose, that heritage and that culture. I can totally agree with that. But thanks for saying to the real racists who are on your case, even though most of them are bots, thanks for saying that, yes, it is an agenda. Iran was doing very well in 1952, thank you very much, under Mohammad Mossadegh. A fantastically progressive, I hate that word, but a great country. You know, Syria was doing fine, thank you. 2008, the United Nations said it was meeting all its millennial goals. Iraq was doing fine as well, even if Saddam Hussein was a complete bastard. But look at what happened when we go in there on a bunch of lies and murder millions of people and displace millions more. This is what happened. Thanks for saying that, because it's true. Over to you again.
It
I don't
is.
Want to go on.
Yeah,
go on, Joe.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, tourism, like people, you know, they love to come and get brand Ireland and get all the things that we're synonymous with, which is friendliness, hospitality, the warm welcome, the beautiful countryside, and, you know, a nice, relaxed environment. But that's fine for the tourists. But actually, those of us living here do not recognize Ireland anymore. Yeah. We do not recognize. We look around and we say, what is this, our country? And again, it's no disrespect to the fact that we have a really, really large migrant population now who are suffering terribly. Many, many of them are homeless. Many of them, of course, are holding up our health service. And I've other opinions on that. And they're brilliant people. But that's because we're driving out our own nursing and medical graduates because they won't work for the wages that are paid by the health service. But it is the case, Richie, that within by the turn of the century, and I would say before that, the Irish will be an ethnic minority in their own country, in their own little island. We only have one little island, and it's much smaller than the one you're on at the moment. And we have a diaspora in the States of about 60 million people who claim Irish heritage. Yeah. All of the people there in the UK, all of the people in Australia and New Zealand who like the idea that there is a little island in the Atlantic that they can call home. They might never even make it back. But I believe that we have to protect Ireland. And I am not in any way ashamed to say that first and foremost, Ireland should be for Irish people. Look, it's obvious. I mean, a fool would say otherwise, but it's obvious. We can't keep doing this. It's ethnic cleansing.
You made a great analogy. No, you made a brilliant analogy earlier on. You know, you can't invite two or three people into your own home because you can't afford to keep them. You might love to, you know, in a little house on the prairie type of way, or the Waltons, you know, it'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Yeah, let's open up the house to everybody. You can't do it. The state, the pillars of the state and important vital public services are hugely impacted by this. There's no two ways about it. Let's talk about some of the core pillars. I know a huge bone of contention to you, with you, of course, is the collusion between the media and the government. Now, the listeners can go to anti-corruptionireland.com, www.anti-corruptionireland.com. Get on there and scroll down. It's a really well-presented website. And you can see the core pillars, the main talk, not talking points, but the information, the reasons for Gemma doing this. Collusion between the government and the media and the authorities like the police and that this is a huge, you being a journalist, this is a major thing.
Yeah, I like my position is I think Ireland can be fixed very easily. And I am an optimist, but I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think it could be. It's just that since the foundation of the state 100 years ago, it was always controlled. As soon as the British left, the fake opposition took over. And Ireland has been raped and pillaged ever since by, you know, two main parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and all of the controlled opposition that set up around them and allow them to do what they do to the country. And most people now are starting to realise that they've been duped time and time again. As I say, there is plenty of wealth in Ireland still, but it is being squandered every single day. So the key pillar of this new movement has to be probity, accountability and transparency in public office. Because when you start to say to politicians and to public servants, if you continue to abuse citizens' rights in the way that you're doing, be that denying families of, you know, whose loved ones have been murdered, denying them justice, you know, applying the law unevenly to people through the courts, through our corrupt court system, the squandering of public wealth, the abuse of taxpayers' money. Every time we have a health scandal, it costs the taxpayer an absolute fortune. And the tax, and that's, there are no consequences for politicians who behave in this way. So if politicians thought, I think they do in Japan, that they would go to jail for squandering people's money, for abusing citizens' rights, and if there was a deterrent there, and there is plenty of law, it's just because we have a political police force, it's never enforced, I think we could turn around the country very quickly. So what I would like to do is, if I ever got a foot in the corridors of power, one of the first things I would be doing would be possibly introducing emergency legislation to prosecute all of those who were responsible for the appalling debt that we now find ourselves in as a nation due to the lack of regulation within our banks.
Which the Irish man and woman has no legal responsibility for. It makes me laugh how they sold this to people that we live beyond our, well, we didn't live beyond our means, we didn't. We didn't live beyond them. This is hugely important. You say create ethical banking, state control of money supply, end vulture funds and evictions. Now, state control of money supply, that has gotten many a decent politician murdered over the years. To take the money supply away from central banks and the five families, the gangsters, I call them, Rockefeller, Warburg, Oppenheimer, Rothschild, these people who create money out of thin air, loan it to countries to get them up to their necks in debt and then rape the country by taking its state assets. So state control of money supply, this is the most important thing, this, as far as I'm concerned.
It is, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert because my whole area of expertise has been in the criminal justice system. So I'm not a business journalist. I'm learning a lot about this. I've watched, you know, over the years and thinking the whole thing is a scam, but it's only really in the last year I've realized to the degree to which it is and how, you know, that this is all fake money really that they were lending out. Yeah. It was figures on screens. And why they keep people in this debt slavery, that it breaks my heart to think that so many of our citizens are in debt slavery. They shouldn't be. And it's also unnecessary taking control of the money supply. I think many people think that we have control of it, that, you know, our central bank is in control of it. It's not. I mean, the government is not in control of the money supply. And we need to start creating ethical banks. Banks that are community-based, that do not charge interest on, you know, houses and cars and vital things like that. But it's a learning curve for
Let's give a nod to our Islamic friends listening, because in Islam, usury is illegal. Interest is illegal. You know what you're talking about there? It's magnificent. You make a national bank. The country has control of its own money supply. It's not about, you know, printing loads of cash and fiat currency and throwing it into public. It's not about that. It's about deciding, right, we'll create money. We won't borrow it. Why would we borrow our own money? And what we'll do is we'll build a million houses, affordable houses, nice houses for Irish people to buy or to rent cheaply the way it was supposed to be years ago. And by building those million houses, the economy will absolutely thrive. It will go up by 1,000,000% in 2 or 3 weeks. That's the sort of thing that needs to happen, but it can't happen because the money system is exactly there to do what you described, is to keep us in slavery for the rest of our lives.
Completely. And I mean, the Irish, you know, again, because we're the softest touch in Europe, you know, it is the case that we bailed out the European banking system more than any other European race or nationality, country, and we represent less than 1% of the population of the EU. We're now being charged the highest interest rates in Europe by our banks. We're being ripped off time and time and time again because they see that we can be. We have these multinational Silicon Valley companies headquartered here in Ireland because they get cheap tax rates. Again, we're being ripped off and they come in here and they enforce their, you know, censorship on people like me. And, you know, I don't know whether you saw recently recently that, that YouTube had my channel shut down twice.
Yeah.
So we actually occupy Google headquarters. This is something in a million years that I never thought I would do. But I had reached enough. I had just reached, you know, I built up my channel. I had over 10,000 subscribers in a matter of months, and they just shut it down on a whim. And I couldn't get anyone on the end of the phone. So, you know, with some yellow vests, we went in and we stayed until one in the morning until my channel was restored. And, you know, these unfortunately are the actions that have to be taken, non-violent. But these companies are, you know, abusing. They're coming here to evade tax. They're making an absolute fortune. They're engaged in wholesale censorship. And they're not paying their fair share. So, I mean, it sickens me to think that our little country is being pillaged to the degree that it is. And it's also unnecessary. But we have to have ethical people running the country. That's the problem.
And, you know,
we don't have.
We don't have. There will be a significant number of people who've tuned in tonight through you, people who subscribe to your YouTube channel and watch your live streams, which I mentioned in the introduction. So there will be people listening to this programme tonight who won't be familiar with me or listening to my programme. So I want to say this. What Gemma is talking about there, about these multinational companies, here's a little bit of information that I spoke about before Christmas, but it hasn't been written about or spoken about on any English newspaper except for one, the Telegraph newspaper. The European Union, the fascist dictatorship, evil European Union, is planning this year to take tax deduction out of the hands of national parliaments for massive companies, for multinational companies. Brussels is going to tax companies, certain companies that are working or based in Ireland or are based in England. They'll tax them directly, not the national parliament. And if you don't believe me, put that sentence into Google. You'll get articles from the Telegraph and you'll get the European Union's own website and their own articles about it. It's beyond a tyranny. And you're beyond. Over there in Ireland trying to raise awareness about stuff like this. And a state broadcaster will not talk about this. RTE. Taxation by Brussels.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, our media is probably the most corrupt in Europe as well. And that's why I'm calling for an end to all public funding of the state broadcaster. I know the BBC has been shamed in recent days. And, you know, it's worse over here. I mean, they are a wing of government. They're the propaganda wing. And all of the papers here now are heavily reliant on government funding through advertising. And, you know, they're using the public's money to keep the public in the dark, and that sickens me. They're not journalists anymore. Journalism is dead in Ireland.
Cowardice, and we see this with the Gardasil scandal. You know, you've written and spoken so much about this. Let me remind our listeners, Gemma O'Doherty is on the line, anti-corruptionireland.com. It's a brand new movement. And the website, it's brilliantly put together, very easy to understand, it's very user-friendly. The mission statement or the movement statement on the homepage is very succinct, very, very easy to follow. I'm not saying that people are stupid, but I'm just saying, you know, you've not tied yourself up in knots with lots and lots of legalese and stuff like that. And there are core pillars there. And ultimately, you'd like people, like-minded people, to stand in local authority elections at the very least, at the very beginning, and to stand for TD in their constituency when the elections come around. That's what you'd like to see.
That's the idea behind this. Yeah, because I'm trying to say to people that we can complain all we want, we can protest, we can occupy whatever, but, you know, and all of these movements eventually get taken over by, you know, the likes of George Soros. In my case, that would never happen. The only way that people can take back control is through the political system. And, like, again, the narrative put out through the mainstream media is that, you know, it's so expensive to run a political campaign. They're always putting out the message to ordinary citizens that don't you dare attempt to try and get any access to politics. You know, you know, we rely on this system of clientelism and cronyism, and that if you've got it, it's probably not dissimilar in the UK, but because of our proportional representation system in Ireland, the voting system is very inclined towards cronyism and favours being done and the nod and the wink. And if you fix my pothole, I'll, you know, give you my vote. And I want to get away from all of that. But I really want to encourage people to run for local election, to get over any fears of whatever they may be called, or that they're not confident enough, or that they need money to do this. All they need is a good pair of shoes and get out and go door to door. They can use this manifesto. They can educate people. There is no greater pleasure I have found in terms of doing this. I haven't gone door to door per se, but I've been holding a lot of public meetings, and it is so great to see that people are animated and they deeply care about their country and they want to do something. And that's why I've decided to do this. But it is about encouraging them to get involved in politics, because there's no other way to take back power.
Yeah, I mean, you and I we haven't argued, but we've chatted about this in the past. I'm for the massive non-violent civil disobedience, which you demonstrated by going to the Google headquarters. But listen, that's not to say that I think what you're doing is wrong. I like the idea of somebody getting elected to a local authority and at least saying these things and putting these things out there. I do like the idea of that. You know, I have no issue with that at all. What I was going to say, there was something that came to mind there and it's just jumped out of my head. It might come back to me in a second. It was on something you were saying a minute ago. But look, we with respect to the media, are you finding, especially with the live stream now and the success that you've had with that, this is what I was going to say. Do you think there's a bit of a tipping point now in terms of there is more of an appetite now for totally independent news sources than there ever was? I'm finding it even here in Manchester. You know, I'm getting emails from people saying that, oh, I'd like to meet you for a cup of tea, or I'd like to, you know, send you something. I thought you were bonkers, but I've listened to a little bit of stuff and now I'm kind of more inclined. I think there's never been more of an appetite now. I think what I'm trying to say is that it's a great time to be attempting what it is you're attempting.
I think it is. It is what, yeah, you're absolutely right. Thanks to programs like yours, you've been ahead of the curve in many ways. You have been. And I only started my YouTube channel a couple of months, well, probably October, November. I've had to set up another one, but it's going very well. And I generally have about 1,000 people watching each evening, and we get about 15,000-20,000 views on most of the streams. And I would talk for a good hour and 40 minutes. It's unbelievable. I mean, people are ready for change. They are sick and tired. They actually are sick. I mean, we have the third highest levels of cancer in the world on this little green island. You know, we've very high levels of childhood diseases, neurological diseases. A lot of people are being struck down by illness very young. And, you know, apart from all of the illness that is out there at the moment, there is all of the death stress. People just feel what our lives are. So there's so much suicide, Richie. There's so much alcoholism. It's like, you know, Ireland has become a very sort of toxic place, and yet it's still so beautiful and the people are wonderful. But we do, I think people are just saying it's gone so crazy what has happened. And it is time. And they are reaching out for alternative. They're watching the likes of RTE, the national broadcaster, and listening to, you know, the Dennis O'Brien channels. And they're just feeling that this is not actually the reality. I'm being told lies. It's just lies, lies, lies.
Yeah, the plurality issue you've hinted at there with O'Brien is hugely problematic. You mightn't have seen it there in Ireland, but global media, which along with Bauer Media managed to acquire nearly every local radio station in the UK, Global has just announced it's going to close dozens of stations. And it's going to close. And in the ones that are not being closed, they're basically going to eliminate their breakfast programmes. They've already eliminated all talk. They'll eliminate the breakfast programmes and they'll just have three national breakfast programmes. And as somebody who came up in radio at WLRFM in Waterford and worked with some amazing people there and learned a lot from them, made plenty of mistakes I did, but I learned a lot as well at the same time. You know, to not have local sources of information and media. I was trying to bang this home to my audience last night and the night before. Oh. it's hugely important. This, all these, you know, same with local newspapers. They were all bought up here as well. The Liverpool Echo, the Manchester Evening News, all these newspapers now, they look the exact same because they're owned by the same companies. They've just been, it's
completely
rubbish.
It's sickening. It's globalism. I mean, yeah. the eyes and ears have left the courtrooms of Ireland. They've left the local chambers, the local authorities. Local people are not getting local news anymore, and there's no accountability at local government and nor at national, and that's why we have this lawless cesspit of an island that we're living on. I mean, that's what it is. It breaks my heart to say that. And I mean, just talking about globalism in general, I mean, it's not only the fact that we feel culturally we are under attack. But, you know, you go into a shop and it's just nearly impossible to buy Irish food anymore. It's you know, we have these Spars and Tesco Local, and, you know, you can barely find an Irish shop selling good Irish food. Every time you ring a call centre, you're on to someone, you know, God knows where. And it's increasing. All of our companies are being bought up. You know, even to get a decent, you know, cafe, it's, you know, it's Starbucks, it's, and local
rubbish,
business.
Yeah.
And this is one of the pillars of my program, my manifesto. I want Ireland, I want it to become small again. I want to support small Irish farmers, organic growers, small cafes and restaurants where you get good homegrown food. And, you know, because I'm convinced this is contributing to the poor health of the nation, that they're not eating good food. It's being imported from God knows where. There's no reason why we can't look after, you know, what we're, you know, you're buying potatoes from Israel and Cyprus and God, why? You know, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah. It's madness, isn't it, to be buying things into your country that you can produce yourself. It is lunacy.
Look, we know that the closer you are to where your food was produced, it's much healthier. And that's, and we're being duped. I mean, the organic thing came in a few years ago, but then it was gone again. And there is a bit of a narrative put out that, oh no, it's not really, you know, it's not really that more beneficial. This is total lies. Of course we should be eating organic and it should be available. It's very, very difficult to get it in Ireland. Big pharma is another big issue for me as well. You know, there was an attempt by the government recently to put a 25% VAT rate on health products, on vitamins and health supplements. Now they've postponed it till September, October, but it's still going to go ahead. You know, this is outrageous.
Well,
they don't care about
it. It's evil. Yeah, I mean, that is evil. That, again, that is part of Agenda 21. That's a depopulation agenda thing. Let's make things that are useful for people, let's make them unobtainable through price hiking. That is madness. And as you well know, the European Union has been a champion of banning Chinese and Oriental and Far East supplements and minerals that people have been eating and using for thousands of years, herbs, on the banned list for the last 5-10 years. It's tyrannical. You see, you never have enough days in the week to have the time to talk about this stuff.
But if they cared about the health of the people, they would be making products like that for, you know, free. I mean, this is another indication. Today we had a statement from our, I hate to call him our leader because he's certainly not mine, Leo Varadkar, making some inane comment about how people in hospitals, if they are offended by the sight of a cross, they should have the right to have it removed. Now, our hospital system is on its knees. We have people dying on trolleys. And yet this is the priority, that if you're offended by the sight of a holy picture or statue or a cross, this is gaslighting.
It's madness,
I mean, for
yeah.
goodness sake, it's mad. It's all of this, you know, just political correctness gone mad.
But it's very unfair to Asian people of Asian origin who might be Muslims. It's unfair to them because I can't imagine too many. I mean, I've asked this of Pakistani neighbours of mine over here in Manchester. I have said to them before, and they're honest. You know, I've asked Sikhs this question. I really have done. I've said, listen, when a nurse comes around to see you and she's got a crucifix, and before they've even finished it, the Muslim and the Sikh said, will you ever fuck off, Richie? Of course not. You see, this is your over here, it's your Owen Jones, your momentum, your progressive lunacy. And the Asian community is like, what the fuck is that? We're not asking for this. I'm sorry, I know it sounds like it's not virtue signalling by me. I just want to be fair. They're not, and yet it is going on. what you've described is going on.
It's everywhere. Single day. Like last week, he said that ISIS terrorists should be welcomed back. Like your lady in the you know, the young bride there who's being celebrated at the moment. I mean, and you think, what? These are people that should never have got Irish citizenship in the first place.
You're going to kill me. You're going to kill me. You're going to kill me. You're going to.
You agree. No, I don't.
I don't. You're going to kill me for interrupting you. Tony Gosling was on the programme yesterday. Tony's an amazing journalist, and he's a left-wing journalist. He wouldn't mind me saying that. While this theatrical Shamima Begum story, when I was sick, when I was really sick, it was all over the news, this massive theatrical staged production. While all that was going on, Tony Gosling, whose opinions would be fairly close to mine when it comes to migration and the reasons why it's happening and stuff like that, Tony said his sources are telling him that the authorities here are not interviewing dozens and dozens that are coming back. So while they're saying, we can't have Shamima Begum back, and the Home Secretary says we're going to take her citizenship away and all that crap, in fact, there are men coming back sometimes, and it's happening fairly frequently, and nobody's even saying, listen, will you come over here and sit down with me for a minute? It's just lunacy. And that's true. And again, the vast majority of people in the country don't know that guys are coming back from the battlefield and they're not being spoken to. They're just flying into the country. Like the guy who's alleged to have done the Manchester bombing 2 years ago, who came back from, he'd been to Turkey, he'd been to Syria, he was on all these watch lists, yet he was able to swan into Manchester, go back to his house, which is only 7 or 8 streets away from where I am now, and eventually 5 days later strap a bomb on his back and kill 22 people. How could that happen? I don't think that's what am I looking for here, Gemma? That's not just poor management or stupidity. There's something else going on there. Over to you.
Oh, of course there is. Look, for goodness sake, it's so obvious. And maybe they use Shamima to, look over here at Shamima while in the meantime we're letting, a lot of this. Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, look, everything at this stage, you just have to question everything. And, as far as Ireland is concerned, like, we don't have any colonial, we never invaded anyone. We don't actually, I believe that there's nothing we can do in Ireland to fix the third world except stop interfering in it. And we haven't, to be fair, as a nation. But we've seen too much bloodshed in our history. A lot of us remember it, We grew up in the 70s and 80s, and it wasn't too far away from us up in Northern Ireland. And we lived in a state of fear, hoping that it wouldn't come to our doors. I don't want to go back to that, but we are heading in that direction. It's only a matter of time before we start seeing these terrorist attacks in Ireland, because they're happening in every other country, except it's not being reported. I mean, you know that Sweden is obviously on the brink at the moment. It's probably the most dangerous country in Europe. Lovely Sweden probably was the safest country. And, there's explosions every day of the week over there now. And crime is not being reported here. The sorts of crimes that are happening in Sweden, in countries that have very, very different cultures side by side, the media are not reporting on these crimes,
they're not.
But it's happening.
It is happening. And while those who are prone to believing in the Salafist, the Wahhabist, the most extreme form of it, while they are a very, very, very small minority, I will always believe that, not because, again, because I'm some kind of loony lefty. The fact is, they're there, trained in Saudi Arabia, enabled to do what they did in Syria by the intelligence agencies of France, of Britain, of the US and of Israel. Whether, my Jewish listeners like it or not, it's a fact. And then when you get hundreds of thousands of migrants leaving a country, a vast majority of them bewildered people whose homes have been burned to the ground or bombed to pieces. Among that migrant flow are some lunatics with these Wahhabist ideas. And if they are being deliberately left into your country, you got to start asking yourselves questions. People need to start asking themselves questions. Just before we run out of time, I'm going to give you the final word, by the way. You've been listening to Gemma O'Doherty today. I'm endorsing the anti-corruptionireland.com movement. Check it out. Get involved. Several hundred people have already signed up to this overnight. Gemma O'Doherty has got skin as thick as a rhinoceros. I don't think she expects everybody to agree with everything she says. I'm sure if you join up or sign up, you know, she'll be happy to hear dissenting opinions and dissenting voices. But get involved and check it out, anti-corruptionireland.com, a brand new movement. Really happy to be talking about that with you today. I'll give you the final word, and then you've better things to do. You might be live streaming tonight. If you are, give it a plug.
I am, yeah. I'm going to just do a stream at 8 o'clock, Richie. Thank you so much for that. Look, you know, I'm a hack at the end of the day, like yourself. For us, politics is the darkest side. The last thing I want to do is to get involved in politics. It is the last thing. But I will not stand by and allow my country to be decimated by these corrupt, the corrupt globalist cabal. And I just can't allow it to happen. So, as I say, it breaks my heart to have to do this. I'd love to just sail off into the sunset. And I could do that because I'm fortunate, because I'm not beholden to any banks, because I sued Dennis O'Brien a few years ago because he threw me out of my 20-year career. So that has allowed me to take some time to assess what's going on. And I'm not, as I say, in any debt. And I feel I've got to do this. And I am urging people to support it. It's not going to be an organized structure. It's going to be very community based. I want people to form their own groupings within their own villages, within their own suburbs, and to say, right, we agree with this manifesto. Let's go for it. Let's try to get elected. Let's support people who will get elected. Let's support people who are decent, honest, who have no vested interests, who can't be controlled. They are out there. These are patriots. We're looking for patriots, people who put the country first and the public first. And maybe I'm an idealist. I am. But I think we can. I mean, Ireland, I'd say, has 5 years left maximum. We're heading on to life support any year now. And it's got to be done. Somebody has to do it. So if I can do any little thing to try and turn around this country, then I'm willing to do it.
Well, the best of luck with it. You're always welcome back on here to chat about it. Folks, if you go on to YouTube.com and if you key in Gemma O'Doherty, you will immediately get a link to Gemma's YouTube channel. She will be streaming there tonight, talking about this in more depth herself on her channel. She'll be live at 8 p.m. It's terrific to watch. It is a terrific watch. I'm not just saying that. I watch it. I don't see it live all the time, but I see every episode. As she said herself, thousands of people tune in. I heard you say something before about, you know, only 10 or 15,000. Listen, that's an indoor basketball arena full of people. Never forget that. That's a rock concert. Every time you go on air and you got 10 or 15 or 20,000 people, which you get tuning in, the Manchester Arena holds 22, 23,000 people when it's full. That's an extraordinary achievement to get that amount of people over 2 or 3 days to watch a programme. So well done, anti-corruptionireland.com.
And Richie, I have to say, I'm following your guide. You know, many of my guests have been your guests that you've been interviewing through the years, people like Mads Pavlik. And, you know, it's like, as I say, you're just so far ahead of
not
us.
Not at all. Stealing from the thieves. You know, that's what I've done all my career. I've heard people on other programmes and thought, brilliant, bring them on. That's the whole thing, isn't it? You know, it's about getting these people with these excellent ideas and great research to wider audiences. There will be thousands of people who watch you who won't listen to this programme. Maybe they don't like me, they don't like my opinions. That's marvellous. But on your programme, they'll hear people like Mads Palsvik and all these other people. So it's brilliant. It's growing and growing and growing and growing. And if there is a God, please God, in a few years' time, we'll be legion, and then we'll put them on the run.
And that's hopefully that's the objective.
We'll have a brilliant show tonight, and we'll catch up again real soon. Anti-corruptionireland.com. Please spread it around on Twitter and on Facebook. You've been listening to Gemma O'Doherty. Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you very much, Richie. Take care now.
An honour. Speak soon. Terrific stuff. Yeah, I'm going to give you that again. It's anti-corruption.com. That's anti-corruption.com. That's the website. You heard Gemma O'Doherty there. Stuart Waiton, PhD, should be joining the programme in a couple of minutes' time. I've just said a quick how you to him, but I know he's very busy. There might be a delay on that. If there is, no problem. We'll either delay him today, or we'll get him on another day. But in the meantime, I suppose we can head over to FSN headquarters and we can get the latest headlines. I'm not sure anything major has broken in the time that I've been speaking with Gemma, but you never know, you know what I mean? So over to FSN for the headlines. It should be Ollie Barrett there.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The Vietnam summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un has collapsed with no agreement on denuclearization. Pakistan says it will free a captured Indian pilot on Friday. Net migration to the UK from non-EU countries is at its highest level for 15 years. And German carmakers BMW and Daimler plan to jointly develop autonomous vehicles, deepening a partnership between the two competitors.
Well, that's it. It was brief, wasn't it? 30-second headlines there from Ollie Barrett at FSN. My friend and colleague Phil Restino in Florida sent me an excellent question for Gemma O'Doherty, but I've only just seen it now. A great guest, Richie, is Gemma. Please ask her what she thinks about Irish farmers growing industrial hemp, both for export and for local manufacture and sale of hemp products, because tens of thousands of products, foods, building materials, health items, etc., can be produced and help to build up local economies in Ireland. Phil, that's an excellent question. It really is. I'll put that to Gemma. I'll send her a mail on that and we'll get an answer from it. But I've got a lot of listeners in Ireland. I do know this. Are there people listening? Is there somebody listening to this programme who knows about hemp and who is involved in growing hemp? If you are, well, we had a guest, didn't we? A couple of years ago, we had a lovely woman on from Ireland who grows hemp. And in fact, she sent us some products. The products were brilliant. Just can't remember her name. I'll dig that out a bit later on. Good question, Phil. Lots of tweets came in as well while I was speaking with Gemma. It is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. It is Thursday, February 20th, 2019. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I need a breath. So we'll have a bit of music. We'll have a bit of music. And when we come back from that, we'll either have Stuart waiting or we'll do something else. All right? Okay? Okay. Back in a couple of minutes' time.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Yeah, and by a couple of minutes' time, I'm all over the place. I've just dug the music out now. There you are. Yeah. Ah, we've done it. Right, back in a couple of minutes with Stuart Waiton or not, anyway. This is Midnight Oil. Yeah, Midnight Oil on the Richie Allen Show. No sign of Dr. Stuart Waiton, Joyce. It's been one of those weeks, hasn't it, with Tony on the missing list the other night, but at least we got him on last night, Tony Gosling as well. I know that Stuart had meetings up until around 6 o'clock, but he said he'd be ready for about 6:15. I reckon his meetings have probably run on. He's one of the good guys. He's a really interesting academic, and he's been writing a lot about the encroachment of the state into our minds. Thought policing. The policing of alleged hate crimes. He's also written a lot and talked a lot about the Named Person Act in Scotland, which is where the Scottish authorities want to name a person for every child in the country as some sort of, you know, watcher, some sort of guardian outside the family, not connected to the family, but to kind of spy and keep an eye on Scotland's children to make sure that no harm has come to them. He's a really fascinating man. He really is. I've had him on a few times. We talked about the ludicrous attempts to police football crowds. We've seen this recently. We've seen teams have games. I switched on the telly one of the days when I was off sick with pneumonia, one of the early days. And I was in bed and I hadn't looked at telly for 3 days. And I switched the telly on and Marseille were playing, the French team, and they had a league game, a Ligue 1. I can't, French is dreadful. Imagine your French being dreadful with French in-laws. Ligue 1. So Marseille were playing and they had to play behind closed doors. And being a football fan, I knew that something had obviously happened with regards to their supporters. And I thought, well, what's going on? And sure enough, a few minutes later, one of the commentators said their game has been is being played behind closed doors because of chanting by the crowd, by some sort of racist or homophobic chanting or something like that, so they've been punished. Not for throwing flares or for invading the pitch. No. No. Because of some sort of chanting. Now, Is it the Velodrome in Marseille? It's a new-ish stadium. It was built for the last major tournament that France held, as far as I know. What about the thousands and thousands of people who went to the game and just watched the game? You can't police that sort of nonsense. Chelsea will fine you because of certain anti-Semitic songs that you're singing. If we hear racist chanting from the crowd or anything that's misogynistic, you know, we'll put a stop to it and we'll fine the clubs, or we will look at possibly making clubs play behind closed doors. This is lunacy. And it's only the tip of the iceberg. You know, I've heard Spurs fans singing that song about that Yiddo song that people say is so offensive. You know, Spurs fans singing it ironically, laughing at it over the years as other football supporters have sung it to Spurs. You know, this "he's only a poor little Yiddo" song. It's a stupid song. It's a childish song. But the idea that you can police that you can police people saying things and shouting things at football matches, is crazy. When people have always policed one another anyway. You know, I've been at football grounds when people have said things that have been pretty nasty, and I've seen people say to them, "Listen, stop saying that stuff. You know, I'm here with my wife, or I'm here with my husband, or I'm here with my child, or whatever, and I don't want to hear that shit, so please give it a rest there." We've always policed ourselves. Stuart was going to be talking about Tommy Robinson. He's talking a lot about this Facebook banning and why it's important that whatever anybody thinks about this guy, Yaxley Lennon, that they understand that it's a very dangerous thing when you turn a blind eye to the banning of people just because you don't particularly like that person. Now, forget about Robinson. You know, it could be anybody. It could be anybody on the left or on the right or in the middle or wherever who's getting a banning or a deletion because of something they have said. Nothing should be unsayable. Nothing. I really believe that, you know. I've been saying that for years and years and years. Nothing should be unsayable. To take offence is a subjective thing. You must choose. You make a conscious decision to get annoyed by something. I've never understood, and because anti-Semitism is in the news so much now lately, I've never understood why anybody, whether they're Jewish or not Jewish, could get offended by somebody saying, "Well, I don't think the Holocaust ever happened." How could that offend you? You've learned, you grew up in education in school, you read the books, you maybe took a trip to Poland or to Germany, you believe it happened, you know the Jews were murdered. How could it possibly hurt your delicate sensibilities because somebody else says they don't believe it? How could you legislate for that? How could you make that a crime? My friend Cocobell, who's got a song, by the way, that I've not properly downloaded yet, that I want to play for you. She's a singer, songwriter, and I am going to do it. It's not on the long finger. I'm going to dig out her song and play it. I will do it if she's listening. I will do it. I'll do it sooner rather than later. But anyway, she sent me a link to an article today. Andrew Pearce is writing in the Daily Mail today, and he's very critical of Chris Williamson, the Labour MP. And in his article, he talks about Gilad Atzmon, my friend and the genius jazz saxophonist. And Andrew Pearce seems to take great umbrage at the fact that Gilad Atzmon doesn't think it's okay to prosecute Holocaust deniers. Now, that's all he's ever said, Gilad. You can't be prosecuting people or locking people up for their opinions, even if you think their opinions are stupid, even if you think what they're saying is fundamentally wrong. You can't do it. It's tyranny. No good can come of it. And I can't imagine. I spoke to Norman Finkelstein. Many times have I interviewed Norm Finkelstein? A dozen, 15 times over the years. And I've said to him, "Listen, your mother and your aunt, if I remember rightly, were at Auschwitz. If you meet somebody and he comes up to you and he says, that's all lies, none of that ever happened, Norm, what would you say?" And Norman said, "I couldn't give a shit, Richie, what they think. It's what they think. I couldn't give a damn. Not interested. Let them think whatever they want to think." That's a mantra. That's a modus operandi for life, isn't it? Isn't it? Why should I give a shit what anybody says about me? The things I've been called over the years. You know? Serious stuff like threats and aggressive stuff because of the nature of the programme. Even when I was back in Spain, phone calls to the studio, people saying they were going to kill me and then hanging up. And you know what? I didn't give a shit. Never called the police. Never. Never complained about it. And I'm nobody special now. I don't want, you know, a pat on the back for it. But never did I get wound up by it. Give a shit. You're lanky this, you're Irish. The Irish are stupid. You're a thick Paddy. You're a thick Mick. You're all this sort of stuff. Yeah. Right, I'm not going to have Stuart waiting today. Sadly, we'll reschedule him for next week. He's not there. I reckon his meetings at his university have run over. So, I'm going to love you and leave you. 90-minute show today. I am easing my way back into it. We would have went to the top of the hour with Stuart, but I've got nothing else to tell you today other than I'll speak to you, of course, on Sunday View, which will be live on Sunday at 11 a.m. UK time. It's been a good week. We've had some good guests. Thanks to Gemma O'Doherty. Thank you, Gemma. anti-irishcorruption.com. And I'll speak to you again on Sunday. Thanks for being with me this week. It's been great to be back. Bye for now.